Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, it's the first weekend of summer. Geez, I love the longest week of the year. A week of the longest days of the year. That's even more interesting. And enjoy it, because we're going back the other way as soon as this week is over, towards December and the winter solstice. But the summer solstice is very special. We'll read a little bit about that. But I want to start out with a little essay by the very talented Mary Schmeek from the Chicago Tribune, who writes an essay, "Don't Miss Short, Sweet Summer." Mary writes, "Summer in Chicago has various start dates. Memorial Day weekend, the summer equinox, the day we start whining about the heat. By two of those measures, with the season we pray for in January and complain about in July, is already speeding toward the first frost, which means it's time for the call to summer action I issue annually. The idea behind the call to action is always the same. Summer is short. Use it or lose it. But from year to year, the particulars vary. A couple of times I've recommended a summer hour, which involves dedicating 1 hour every day to something summery, which might mean nothing more ambitious than sitting outside with a book. One summer I suggested buying a stack of index cards. Each day you take a card and make note of the summery thing you did that day and set it in a separate pile. The stack of summer accomplishments would grow while a stack of blank cards shrank, a visible sign of passing time. Other years I've devised summer to-do lists. This year, the summons comes in the form of the following: a summer manifesto. Life is short. Summer is shorter. I thought that was an original turn of phrase, but having just Googled to make sure, I see it's not. So let me begin by stating my manifesto another way. Today is the first day of the rest of your summer. And if that reminds you of the corny poster that teenagers used to hang on their bedroom walls, the one that said, "Today is the first day of the rest of your life," all I can say in my defense is that truth, like summer, repeats itself. So, yes, today is the first day of the rest of your summer. That fact will be true every day until the summer ends, a fact so full of hope and terror that a reasonable person might want to numb the confusion by curling into a ball and taking a nap. So, go ahead, take a nap. Summer is made for napping, for playing hooky, for going to a ball game in the middle of the afternoon. One of the great gifts of summer, which is a psychological as well as meteorological season, is its invitation to slow down, to change pace, to take our time. Today is the day to begin taking your sweet summer time. But taking time for summer is hard. It requires discipline, ever more so than in a 24/7 wired world. The discipline of taking time means just saying no to your bottomless email inbox. No to your bottomless Netflix queue. No matter how hard it beckons you with new episodes of Scandal and a whole new binge-worthy season of Orange is the New Black. No to squandering even a minute of your fleeting summer by clicking on that online promo for celebrities without makeup, which will not make you feel one whit better about yourself. You know what will make you feel better about yourself? Taking a walk on a summer evening to the ice cream place. Lying in a park at dusk and listening to live music. Taking a bike ride. And let's say no to nonstop news. All the nonsense of the world will go on whether or not we are there to comment on it at the speed of Twitter. It's summer. Let's step away from the screens. Go outside. Take a walk. Take a swim. Take a vacation. Take a breath. Take the time to stare at the leaves and wonder where they came from. To look at the sky and wonder where it ends. To sit outside talking with someone whose conversation you enjoy. To feel the air on your skin. Summer is here. The days are getting longer, but these days that seem to last forever won't last long. No matter how many more summers you have ahead of you, it's not all that many. There is no photo of the summer sky on Facebook that is as beautiful as the sky itself. Very beautiful words by Mary Schmick from the Chicago Tribune. Don't miss our short, sweet summer. And of course, we do have the summer solstice coming up. If today seems, or this week seems, to go on and on, it's not your imagination. It's the longest day of the year, the summer solstice. This celestial event, celebrated for thousands of years by people all over the world, is increasingly observed by naturalists and New Agers, as well as just plain folks who just plain love summertime. The solstice, Latin for sun stand still, heralds the start of summer, which officially begins at 7:26 in our time zone. The sun rises at 5:16 and sets at 8:31 at its farthest northern point all year. Noontime shadows will be the shortest of the year. The summer solstice was first marked in ancient times as a kick-off-your-boots holiday in the long summer days of relative ease between the hard labor of planting and harvest. It influenced the placement of pyramids and helped to shape the modern calendar. 5,000 years ago, ancient people placed enormous stones in a circle on an open plain in what is now Wiltshire, England. Today, Stonehenge remains the ultimate solstice party destination. The British government opens the site to the public free of charge for the event. Last year, a crowd estimated at 20,000 gathered to drum and dance through the night and then watch the rising sun balance on one of the main stones of the mysterious structure. The solstice is about the death and regeneration of nature. King Arthur Pendragon, the British Council of Druids bearded head battle chieftain, said at last year's celebration. But beware, too much sun, warned Chicago landscaper and Jungian scholar Rinda West. The sun is like the eye of reason, the eye of ego, she explained. It saved mankind from all kinds of horrible instinctual things, but by the same token, it can take over and rule us. People get all type A and ego-driven. It's nice to remember there's a moon as well, an unconscious, very fertile inner life. So the summer solstice. How did those stones get there? That's what I'd like to know. Aliens? I don't know. Can't figure that out. Kind of interesting. Well, of course it's summer. So who should we listen to? Well, of course we should listen to the Beach Boys and the Sounds of Summer. So let's play two of their songs. Let's start out with one of my favorites in honor of my California girls out west. And then beautiful love song, Surfer Girl. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
By really
Enjoyed that as we kick off our first summer show of the season, the Beach Boys Sounds of Summer, California Girls and Surfer Girl, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show, a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Famed choreographer, former Hubbard Street Dance Company member Ron DeJesus collaborates with Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater to create Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails. The former Ensemble Español dancer DeJesus pays homage to the company and Dame Libby Comeco, with new work premiering at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, June 20th through the 22nd. Combining flamenco and contemporary dance styles, famed choreographer Ron DeJesus collaborates with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater in residence at Northeastern Illinois University to create Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, a ballet in three movements, honoring the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater and its founder, Dame Libby Comeco. Mil Clavos explores how traditional Spanish dance can be presented within a modern context, referring to the clavos, or the nails that are pounded into the bottom of the dancer's shoes. This new work examines the indestructible bond between Spanish dance and contemporary movement, as it affirms that the nail that holds time-honored traditions and modern sensibilities together is found in the artist's dedication to their craft. Mil Clavos will premiere at the American Spanish Dance and Music Festival Flamenco Passion Gala Concerts at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, June 20th and 21st at 7:30 and June 22nd at 3. For more information, visit northshorecenter.org. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning choreographer and dancer who has worked with Joseph Holmes Dance Theater, Chicago Repertory Dance Ensemble in Hubbard Street, one of the original cast members of the Twyla Tharp Billy Joel Tony Award-winning musical Movin' Out, artistic ambassador for the Northeastern Illinois University, recipient of the New York Music Theater Festival's Award for Excellence in Choreography, and now presenting with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater, Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, June 20th, 21st, and 22nd, at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, Mr. Ron DeJesus. Ron, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations on the great success that this will be. I guess you're very excited about it, huh?
I'm excited to be back at my own grassroots, the first company I've ever started performing with, and gave me structure and gave me guidance in my field and gave me all the tools that set my whole career, you know, ablaze. So I'm really honored to have been invited to partake and help them at this festival and create a new creation for them.
And what a career it's been. I think it's very interesting. We were talking about this a little earlier. How this all came about, and you better than anyone else can tell that, you were from the south side of Chicago, west side of Chicago, and had certainly a challenging upbringing, a family of nine kids, and you had an opportunity and took advantage of it. Tell us that story, Ron.
Yeah, I'm from Bucktown area, born and raised, what I tend to call like the sort of Hispanic Bermuda Triangle. I live within the radius of Bucktown, Wicker Park, and Humble Park. It was a challenging time in the 70s, and went to Roberto Clemente, and during my school years, during there, they created a daytime disco at the Roberto Clemente during the study period from 2 to 4, so they converted lobby, the disco, live DJ, and they served themselves, and freestyle, and merengue, and all the Hispanic cultural you know, folkloric dances, and from that point on, I started to embrace it with, you know, a little bit more structure. The girl I was dating that took it seriously, she graduated, I became a dropout, she went to Northeastern, I tagged along with the books, carrying them, and then met Libby through her and her her company, and then Libby asked me what I was doing with my life, and I said, I'm sort of floundering, and I'm sort of dramatic. And she said, why don't you get your GED and I'll get you a scholarship here at Northeastern and we'll set you straight. And so I cracked the whip before you knew it. I got my GED, I had the scholarship, and then I started taking active courses at Northeastern, and then I was getting all these dance composition classes and all kinds of conceptual dance, you know, information and data. And then I learned, you know, the power of, you know, really constructive technique that ultimately led to the theater, that ultimately led to, you know, me understanding how to construct dance and become a better artist. So, all because somebody took a glance over to her and an opportunity. And that's the unique thing that Libby has, to see talent and nurture it, you know, feed it, educate it, trust it, and then, you know, give it life. That is a really great opportunity I have.
She certainly has that vision, and she's done it to so many people. But interestingly enough, you were always kind of had an affinity for dance. I mean, you used to watch musicals of Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly and so forth. So innately, there's something inside there that needed just the, what was that old saying that somebody approached Michelangelo when he was carving David, and he said, it was always in there, I was just bringing it out. And it was always in within you, and she just brought it out.
Absolutely. You know, when I started, you know, earlier on, you know, my mom was diagnosed, undiagnosed mental illness. She was schizophrenic at the early stages, and she kept me back from school to entertain her while the other kids went to school. My brothers and sisters, nine of us, and I was the chosen one to sort of accompany her at home. And she didn't interact, but she would plop me in front of a TV and used to watch old Jeffrey movies of Fred Astaire,
sure,
and all the production.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was my outlet of artistic excursion. You know, I surrendered to that, and it helped me escape from what I was encountering. And I learned the beauty of production value, styles, different styles of movement, and I think that was my introduction. So dance found me, and it was my savior. And I had no idea I was actually gathering all these tools that were consciously being stored in my creative vault, and then ultimately led to the sort of the urban dance form of the neighborhood, the Latino neighborhood that I was in, and growing up, and then ultimately, which led to a constructive development, you know, through Libby and through proper training, which then led to all the other dance companies and mentors and teachers and, you know, artistic directors and movie directors and operas and plays and so forth that I've been able to create for and dance for and all the above.
Well, I think that's kind of interesting. You talk about some of the other accomplishments that you've been involved in, and one of which is Movin' Out, which was a great musical, very successful, Tony Award-winning musical. I had the opportunity of working with Twyla Tharp, one of the great modern choreographers in America today, and, of course, the music of Billy Joel went on to other music with Frank Sinatra and so forth, and that was kind of the first one that really kicked off that kind of genre of musicals.
Yeah, it's called the Danceical. You know,
right, danceical, no, that's right.
No text other than the lead singer, and then the rest was just pure dance, retelling the whole show. So, you know, we had to have, you know, Triumph has a very high standard of quality artistry that she needs to orchestrate getting her innovation out in both of these productions. So it was an honor to be invited to sort of, like, have the opportunity to sort of experience all of that, and ultimately led to, you know, having a network on Broadway, and understanding because that's another whole mention of artistry, different kinds of dance. So I learned yet another facet of my creative world, another realm of educational factors that I benefited in a large way. But Twyla is a iconic Americana historical, you know, treasure, you know, so it was a pleasure to be part of that.
And a couple other films, The League of Their Own, which is a great, great movie about the inception of women's baseball during the war and so forth. And Julie Taymor, of course, who went on to great success with The Lion King and amongst other things, the Beatles musical Across the Universe.
Oh, yeah, that came through Danny Ezzolo was a choreographer, he's a great choreographer, and born and raised in, you know, being, you know, he was part of a invitation through Lou Conti of Summer Street Dance Chicago, the former director, Lou Conti, and he invited him and had many opportunities to work with him. And so when Danny was collaborating with Julie Taymor on Across the Universe, and he had invited me as part of his six-member sort of artistic team that he sort of molds and shapes and builds vocabulary on. It's like improv and all kinds of little exercises. And then ultimately, which led to developing more enriched scenes for the movie. So that was an incredible opportunity as well to work with Julie Taymor, whose mind is beyond genius as well, another kind of creature that just is so gifted and so original and takes chances and has such a passion for her craft. And I learned a great deal partaking with her and that project.
Quite an opportunity to work with some of the iconic giants in choreography and music.
It wasn't like something I was, you know, hunting for. It just organically sort of like presented itself. And it was, it shows that, you know, it's all about networking. It's all about how you interact with specific artists. Because with Danny Ezzolo, who was the choreographer for Across the Universe, you know, he worked with Hubbard Street. So my link was through him and his generosity to, you know, when you make a relationship like that, they remember the talent, they remember the chemistry, they remember, you know, how well that, you know, it sort of dovetails into one another. And so he offered that opportunity to take part down the road. I would have never thought years down the road that he would be the choreographer for a movie. And then that invitation, since he knew me from our past, you know, that was just a natural evolution that the extension reached out. And, you know, you always want a team that supports your vision and that you can trust and that you can rely on to help make original conceptual body of work. And so he extended that, you know, so that was, that was definitely one of the highlights of, you know, my career as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Neil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, which is a very clever and unique idea, exploring the clavos or the nails that are pounded into the bottom of the dancer's shoes. Of course, you're doing this in honor of Dame Libby, and but three movements in the piece. Tell us a little bit about those, Ren.
Well, originally I was invited to collaborate with them. They were trying to reach deadline for Grant, and we had like 48 hours to kind of like put it all together on paper. That's not a whole lot of time for me to kind of dream. And
oh, yes, it is. You had plenty of time.
So it was quite challenging. So, you know, I really submerged 48 hours in trying to find music that, you know, what I would call, what would be complementary to the company. And then the things as I soul-searched to what were essence and seeds that really stood, you know, that planted within me the beauty of what the company stands for, was I remember my first impression. Now, you have to remember, I had no, like, professional training, and the first time I was, you know, in the studio and on stage, I was watching Libby work collaboratively with her mother, who is an incredible pianist. And Libby, not only she's an incredible flamenco dancer, but she was classically trained, and she also had this unique masterful control of castanets, which were within themselves, the artistry in that was unbelievable. So what was impressive to me was to see these two women not collaborate in that regard, woman to woman, mother to daughter, artist to artist. And I thought, wow, that's a really powerful, you know, statement right there, and see that bond. It was, I've met my, you know, I didn't really have like parents. My mom was a single mom, and so to see that kind of really powerful to me. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately that was the kickoff point. So I found music that reflected that personal statement, how I felt about that, my homage to that honorable moment that stuck in my head. And I tried to emulate that and find the music that complemented that, and the music has castanets in it, and it's a piano, and very simple. It's not your typical guitar and what have you. It's very clean and simple, and really a delicate piece, which I thought was a good reflection of that. And then from there, I searched for two pieces of other music that bookend that centerpiece, and that centerpiece we call the Red Doves. And then I found another piece of music for the opening, and that was more of a male figure, masculinity energy, and I called that section New Passage, because that was me introduced to the male power of the artillery of footwork and the precision, and I thought that was really something I could embrace. It had that Latin flair, I could relate to that. It had a lot of passion, I can relate to that, and it also ended a great deal of discipline. And so that was, that first movement really sort of, I surrendered to that impression. So me, New Passage was for me entering, and I was learning at the same time as a young artist, immersing myself into this art form. And then the third section, which I call Black Fire, is mainly about all this chaotic whirlwind and the drive that, you know, flamenco can give. And it's very much chaos, sort of like organized chaos, basically. And it has a real crescendo ending. It builds with such a powerful statement. And I thought it was a nice complimentary finale to the other two pieces. So I was very fortunate to have found all three pieces of music that were complimentary to one another.
Here's a question, Ron. Do you come up with the themes or the ideas or the types of dances you want to do first, or do you come up with the music and match the music to the dance, or the dance to the music, or does it vary?
It will always vary. Each production, each creates its own sort of demand, and you can walk in with a company or walk into any institution, and I choreograph worldwide. And so when you walk into an institution, it could be a collaboration. They need a solo, or they need a classical, something duet, and they may guide you, or we're doing a collaboration with a, you know, sort of a world-renowned, you know, composer. It depends on whatever it is, or sometimes it's a full open palette where they allow me to just immerse myself. It's whatever you want to state, whatever you want to share, whatever vision you want to regurgitate, or sort of give birth to, you have full privileges. So each project will present a different opportunity. Most of the time, I usually sort of, if I'm not, you know, placed within parameters and restricted, and have, well, you know, needs to be a duet or a full company piece. Like Bravos, we knew that it was going to be a full company piece, and I usually don't title my ballets until they're done, but we were reaching a deadline, and so I knew what would encompass all of this. Hence, made me think, what is the work that's put into, you know, a big production like that, and a big body of work? And so I thought, you know, the shoes never get an opportunity to, you know, those are the instruments that really accentuate the technique in itself. And each pair of shoes does hold a great large amount of nails within them. And I thought collectively with 20 plus dancers on stage, you do the math, you know, and each holding about 100 plus nails in them, you know, it rounds off to about 1,000. So that's your original question. You know, it depends on inspiration can come from, you know, the smallest, you know, portrait. It can come from, you know, pattern. It can come from the emotional experience, you know, a loved one. It can come from various points, and sometimes it just fall out of the sky. I said, project with Air Supply, and speaking with Graham Russell, the lead singer, and he tells me when he has an idea, he has 15 minutes, he feels the earth quake and the sky open up and the song falls in his lap. Mm-hmm. And he's tuned, and then that 15 minutes, he has only that window to write it down. He hears the lyrics, he hears the orchestrations, he hears it all, and he's got to immediately put it down on paper. Otherwise, it's out of, you know, goes right by him. So every artist has a different way of channeling in that beautiful, you know, relationship with discovering their craft. So that's all. It varies.
So sometimes you hear music and you say, boy, I could put a great dance to that. Or sometimes do you hear or see a piece of work with music and say, you know, I could tweak that a little bit. I could do something a little different with that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you can always, you know, and that's sort of like, that's the one thing I'm so used to, you know, in concert dance. You know, you rarely have an opportunity to, you know, readjust music, because you always purchase music and it's sort of basically canned. When you do musicals and what have you, you have opportunities to somewhat manipulate the orchestration, you know. Let's do it, you know, an 8-bar extension, let's have, you know, let a roof here, give me a rim shot there, and, you know. So it depends on the project and it depends on the collaboration aspects, you know, who and what you're dealing with. But, you know, inspiration, at most 95% of the time, I'm really inspired by music. If it grabs me, I can get lost and submerge myself and bathe myself in that world of what the composer was feeling when he wrote it. And then I see color, I see shapes, I see, you know, design factor, and it just sort of like I ride the vehicle in that wave of what this person is generously offered in orchestrated.
And who are some of the choreographers you looked up to? Of course, you worked with Jolie Taymor, you worked with Twyla Tharp, Bob Fosse or Jerome Robbins or even Busby Berkeley. Who are some of the people that you looked up to?
Well, I mean, you know, staying within the reality of my, well, you know, iconic people like, you know, Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly. I mean, those are mentors from afar that you emulate, that you want to become, and you'll utilize their style in different facets. Choreographers, the ones that move me have been the ones that, you know, and that's, I've been very fortunate with each company that I've danced with. Each company offered me different styles. When I danced with Joseph Holmes Dance Theater, which was mainly an Afro-American company with peppered, you know, some, you know, there was some Latin people in there, some Clara, you know, and that company offered me and the exposure of Martha Graham's technique. And that is the fundamental basis and foundation of modern dance. She was the mother of modern dance. Mm-hmm. So I learned that. And then, you know, I danced, you know, Paul Taylor's work. And then you learn that conceptual approach to choreography and her structure. And then Twyla Tharp became a real iconic, you know, game changer for me. Yuri Killian, which was a different, completely a European choreographer that's world-renowned and phenomenal. Nacho Duato, Ohad Narin, you know, which is an Israeli choreographer. Each one offers different styles, different approaches, and it changes your life if you have opportunities to have worked with these kinds of unique, gift, you know, incredible moving creatures. So they do provide inspirational, and they provide you with tools, and you learn from them, you know, their approach, how they construct work, how their work ethic, and how movement, you know, responds to them, and then how the final product, you know, how it came to life. So I don't have one very specific, because they're always very unique and very different. You're asking me like Sophie's Choice. You know, that's the son or the daughter. It's like, oh, no, it's my fault.
So you stand on the shoulders of all those great choreographers and dancers who have come before, and you absorb everything from them and become your own person. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Jerome Robbins is another one.
Sure.
Balanchine. Metro Balanchine, a master, just a master at his craft as well. So they all offer such a unique opportunity to get into the minds of these creatures as they, you know, discover their own voice, and they took chances, and they were real pioneers. And that's the biggest factor, that they took the extra step, and they had the courage to really pursue that, and they orchestrated that to allow their passion to come to life.
Well, it's going to be a great weekend at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. For someone, before we wind up here, Ron, for someone who's coming to enjoy Ensemble Español, Spanish dance theater, for the first time, and coming to experience Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, and this is a neophyte, what advice would you give them?
Come in the door, open-minded, be a very clear vessel to absorb the thrust of what they're going to encounter, of all the array of different styles and different beautiful techniques, beautiful artistry, and do not take for granted that just because they see within their hour and a half or however long the show is, that all that took hours and weeks and months of commitment from every artistic team, from the dancers, from just come, enjoy yourself, you know, sort of place all your worries to the side, and your bills and the stress, and just escape the landscape.
So come and enjoy the art of the art of dance.
Absolutely.
The Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater in Residence at Northeastern Illinois University preserves, presents, and promotes the flamenco, folkloric, classical, and contemporary dance and music traditions of Spain, from the Renaissance to the 21st century. Founded in 1975 by Dame Libby Cumeco, the company was incorporated in 1976 and built an artistic residency program with the university. Today, the company is a critically acclaimed performance ensemble that has toured nationally and internationally, and is considered one of the Chicago's most dynamic arts organizations. Combining flamenco and contemporary dance styles, famed choreographer Ron de Jesus collaborates with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater in Residence at Northeastern Illinois University to create Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, a ballet in three movements, honoring the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater and its founder, Dame Libby Cumeco. Mil Clavos explores how traditional Spanish dance can be presented within a modern context, referencing the clavos, or the nails that are pounded into the bottom of the dancer's shoes. This new work examines the indestructible bond between Spanish dance and contemporary movement, as it affirms that the nail that holds time-honored traditions and modern sensibilities together is found in the artist's dedication to their craft. Mil Clavos will premiere at the American Spanish Dance Theater and Music Festival Flamenco Passion Gala concerts at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, June 20th and 21st at 7:30, and June 22nd at 3. For more information, visit northshorecenter.org. And on the line with us right now is Rhonda Hazos. Ron, a delight to chat with you. Congratulations on your success, and certainly looking forward to this weekend. And I'm sure that our good friend Ann Fink will keep us tuned in on what else is going on with Ensemble Español.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much.
And again, I'm going to give a phone number for the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, 847-673-6300. Continued success, and let's keep on each other's radar.
Yes, bravo.
Thank you, Ron.
Bye.
Ron DeJesus, the award-winning choreographer, presenting with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater, Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, June 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. For information, 847-673-6300. Quite a delight chatting with Ron. What a very accomplished gentleman. Worked with some of the iconic choreographers and dancers in America today. And it'll be a great weekend. So if you get the opportunity, step up to the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. You're listening to The Kevin Moore Show, a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Theater on the Lake announces its 62nd season. The Chicago Park District has announced the 62nd season of Theater on the Lake. This summer, the theater will take performances on the road while its historic lakefront venue undergoes renovation. The season will run June 18th through August 10th. Theater on the Lake's 2014 season, entitled Chicago Summer Theater Festival, is presented as part of the Chicago Park District's Night Out in the Parks series. Launched last year, Night Out in the Parks is part of Mayor Emanuel's citywide vision for art and culture. It is also a key component of the Chicago Cultural Plan, which was launched by Mayor Emanuel and the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events in 2012, and is the first plan of its kind in more than 25 years. Through the Cultural Plan, the city is making investments in public art, music festivals, films, concerts, exhibitions, and performances. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning dramaturge who has worked at Steppenwolf Theater, the Theater School of DePaul University, and the Playwright Center. Teacher, mentor, proud graduate of Columbia University, nationally recognized arts administrator, and the managing director of Chicago's own Theater on the Lake, now presenting the exciting 2014 season, Ms. Samantha Chavis. Samantha, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be a part of your show once again.
Well, it's an honor to have you, and certainly you're going to be running around a little bit this summer, kiddo.
We certainly are. We certainly are. We've got our work cut out for ourselves.
But some exciting plays nonetheless, and I think what's so cool about this, and has been for all the history of Theater on the Lake, Samantha, is the fact that there's so many different theater companies in Chicago that have an opportunity to come and introduce themselves to the audiences.
It's true. You know, I joke that we call ourselves the wine flight of theater festivals. there's over 200 storefront theater communities or 200 storefront theaters and regional theaters and theaters of every size here in Chicago, and that what we try and do is we try and create a festival every year that really showcases a strong cross-section of that sampling to be able to give wider exposure and be a resource for Chicago storefront theater community.
And a great festival it is, and it's got to be tough to pick, half a dozen different plays and different companies to come out.
Well, I have a little bit of help. This is our third year in a row where we're using our artistic curator initiative, and how that works is each year we invite two curators, two artists, leaders from within Chicago's storefront theater community to come together and help co-curate the season. And so the three of us go out and we see just a ton of shows to be able to really truly represent this rich theater community that we live in. So this year we're lucky enough to have Helena Case, who's the artistic director of The Hypocrites, and Reggie Lawrence, who's the executive director of Impact. So they've done a really great job, and we just so appreciate, you know, this process, because we really want to drive home that it is in fact a resource for Chicago's theater community, and that it's transparent and inclusive, and we want to invite the community in to help us make these these decisions every year.
I have the pleasure of being on the board of Chicago College of the Performing Arts at Roosevelt University, and we have some very, very talented students there, as well as the talented students that come from Northwestern and Columbia and DePaul University. And what we have here in Chicago, you know better than anyone, as does Helena and certainly does Reggie, that we have the opportunities for these young people to find jobs and find opportunities to hone their craft.
It's true. It's such a great, not only training ground, but also a place to really sustain yourself and work creatively, because there's just so much opportunity, so much diversity, artistic diversity and otherwise, across the city. So, yeah, we are really lucky to be living and working here.
Well, we start out with 6 hours short at Union Park in the gymnasium tonight, I think.
It's true. We open tonight. You know, it was not necessarily an easy process to choose three locations, but we really wanted to choose three locations that really represent different parts of the city, because this, we really feel, was an opportunity to share our festival with the rest of the city. We're a Lincoln Park festival. We always have been for 61 years, and, you know, this is really an opportunity to share it and go wide. So, yes, our first show tonight is at Union Park, home of Pitchfork. And we joke that it's still Theater on the Lake because it sits right on Lake Street over at Union Park. 6 Hours Short is a relatively new company, and we call it a site-specific piece. It's, the title of the piece is The Lockout, a Musical, and it's loosely based on the 2011 NBA lockout.
Mm.
So it takes place in the actual gymnasium. It's going to be a little toasty tonight, but really fabulous nonetheless. We really turned that gym into a fully functioning theater.
And then we go to Burger Park Cultural Center's Urban Theater Company's First Class.
It's true. So Urban Theater Company is a really exciting, it's a really exciting company in town. And this is a two-person play. It's very intense. It's very intimate. It really explores these two not blood brothers, but brothers just the same growing up and really struggling to sort of find their place in the world and their identity. And it's a relatively new play as well. And it's we have two new companies at Theater on the Lake this year, and this is one of them.
Again, at Burger Park Cultural Center, we have Stage Left, which is a very popular theater in Chicago, A Day in the Death of Joe Egg.
This play is so fabulous. It was written by a British playwright in the 1960s, I believe, and it was so ahead of its time, and I think still is. A very brave, very funny play about, it's a domestic drama about a couple who's raising a severely disabled daughter and really trying to find the humor within that and how to keep themselves together despite sort of this situation that is pulling them apart. Really, truly compelling. And the reason why we're anchoring four of our shows at Burger Park Cultural Center is because, again, it sits right on the lake. So
right.
Integrity of the festival.
Right.
It's a great waterfront cafe that's right next to it, so it really mirrors our original festival.
Theo Ubique, which is, of course, run by Fred Anzavino, who we've had on the show before, and he's done such great work. Light in the Piazza comes to mind, and he's going to do a Cole Porter songbook for us.
He sure is. Yeah, this play is so lovely for all the Cole Porter fans out there. These guys really do it justice. It's a really joyous, summery, breezy piece that you can't help but tap your toes to.
And it'll be at Washington Park, which is kind of interesting. It's a nice venue there.
It actually is going to be at the Burger Park Cultural Center.
Oh, that will be.
It will be.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of our four shows that will be.
It'll be beautiful. Open air. It'll be terrific, you know, with a beautiful sunset and everything. That'll be wonderful.
It will. It's in the little coach house in the back that sits right on the lake, but before and after there's absolutely opportunities to enjoy the lakefront breeze.
This is an interesting play because it's been around for a while. Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, the Neo-Futurists.
These guys are just a Chicago treasure. So this is their 25th anniversary, and they're doing a 25th anniversary show for us over at the Washington Park Refectory, which is this beautiful building that sits right in the middle of Washington Park, right alongside Hyde Park. And they call this the longest-running show in Chicago, and for good reason. It's pretty amazing. They do 30 plays in 60 minutes, and they literally have a clothesline strung up, and the audience yells a number, and they pull down the number, and that number represents a play. And these plays are serious, funny, political, personal, you name it, but you have such a full, complete experiencing them. It's indescribable. You just have to experience to know it. And we joke that the Washington Park Refectory is right on one of the biggest pools in Chicago, so it's feet around the pool.
Combining sport, comedy, poetry, spectacle, politics, and personal honesty, Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind has been exciting audiences for 25 continuous years with its ever-changing slate of 30 plays performed in random order against a relentless 60-minute timer. That's
great. And I believe if they can't do 30 plays in 60 minutes, if they do accomplish that, then they order a pizza for the audience. And the delivery guy really comes in the middle of the play.
But who's counting, right? Who's counting? And then finally, Straw Dog Theater Company's Great Expectations, Dickens' great classic at the Burger Park Cultural Center.
Yeah, these guys, this play has been so critically acclaimed. I think it did pretty well at the Jeff Awards as well. And it's six characters representing 40 characters in this classic, in this adaptation of this classic novel. And it's pretty extraordinary. And again, one of the kind of advantages of being in the Burger Park Coach House is that it's really such a personal, intimate space. So you really get to experience it without, though we love Theater on the Lake's main space, but sometimes we couldn't do such intimate plays like this. So it's right. it's a real pleasure being able to choose plays that are best suited for a smaller spot.
Now, Samantha, when will you be able to get back to the Theater on the Lake?
You know, we're not 100% sure. Possibly next summer, possibly the summer after. It
okay.
really depends on the length of the renovation and the timeline for it, which is at this moment to be determined.
It's been such a gem in the city of Chicago for so many years. Starting in 1920, it was a building that was built, of course. And in fact, last year, weren't you awarded the Joseph Jefferson Award for Theater on Lakes for its commitment to fostering live theater?
Ago,
right.
For our 60th anniversary, we were awarded the Jeff Award, and it was really such an honor. It was my first year at Theater on the Lake, so I really can't take credit for it. It's really the legacy that my predecessors built. But it was very nice to be appreciated for, you know, being such an institution in the city that we certainly hope to maintain, you know, in many years to come.
Well, you're certainly continuing that legacy, and we all thank you for that. If people would like to get some information, how would they go about doing that?
They can go ahead and visit our website. I can give it to you. It's quite long. It's www.chicagoparkdistrict.com/events/theater-on-the-lake.
Or Google it, just Theater on the Lake.
You can just Google Theater on the Lake, or you could call our box office at 312-742-7994, and we're selling online tickets in advance on our website.
Theater on the Lake announces its 62nd season. The Chicago Park District has announced the 62nd season of Theater on the Lake. This summer, the theater will take performances on the road while its historic lakefront venue undergoes renovation. The season will run June 18th through August 10th. And on the line with us right now is the managing director of Chicago's own Theater on the Lake, Samantha Chavis. Samantha, thanks very much for taking a little time. It's always delightful to chat with you. And again, maybe a phone number if people would like to get some information.
Great. Thank you. So delightful to speak with you as well. Again, the phone number is 312-742-7994.
Well, let's have a great season.
Thank you.
Okay, kiddo, take care.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Samantha Chavis, the managing director of Theater on the Lake, a great gem in the city of Chicago, although we'll be able to see it but not enjoy it, but certainly will around the city at the various venues, being Washington Park Refectory, 5531 South King Drive, and Washington Park Woodlawn Community, Union Park, 1501 West Randolph, and the Burger Cultural Center, 6205 North Sheridan, in the Edgewater community, right up by Loyola University. It's right on the lake, so it'll be a great time and certainly wonderful season. And for information, again, 312-742-7994. A few words about swooning over June. They were a long time coming, these June days, but now they're here. June doesn't just bloom, it bursts. It explodes in a profusion for the senses. Even the sky gets into the act. Vivid sunsets are dipped in purple, magenta, pink, and red before fading to a twilight hue that serves as electric blue backdrop to planets and stars. June has a way of, well, busting out all over, as Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein put it in Carousel. June means no more school days. It's the beginning of lazy and languid. These are rip off the tie, ditch the books, paint the toes days. The beaches have been opened, the lakefront raked and pretty, the parks are ready, fountains finally are spraying. A tentative trickle of boats onto the lake has turned into a torrent. Golf clubs have been cleaned and bikes readied. The drinks are on ice. The grill has been fired up and the meat marinated all the better to sizzle. Getaways have been plotted and suitcases packed. All summer long, the tempo from Millennium Park to Ravinia is brassy and bold one minute, silky and soft the next. Soon there'll be roses and fireworks, both man-made and those spectacular thunderstorms provided by Mother Nature. They are all hallmarks of summer in the city, which has a syncopated beat all its own. Is there anything better than the start of summer? Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, the award-winning choreographer and dancer, Ron DeJesus, now presenting with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater, Mil Clavos, 1,000 Nails, June 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. 9501 Skokie Boulevard. For information, 847-673-6300. And Samantha Chavis, the managing director of Chicago's own Theater on the Lake, now presenting the exciting 2014 season. And you can get that information, of course, by going to the Chicago Park District website or calling 312-742-4798. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great first weekend of summer.
It's time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, then any luck, then I suppose the music